Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. For 15 years now, Fidelity Investments Canada has delivered the Fidelity Retirement Survey with the goal of helping financial advisors better understand the latest trends so they can successfully guide their clients through the retirement journey. This year's report features exclusive insights on the impact of COVID-19 on retirement planning, and also leverages 15 years of retirement data to directly compare the impact of COVID-19 on retirement against the impact of the 2008-2009 financial crisis. Peter Bowen, VP Tax and Retirement Research, and Michelle Monroe, Director Tax and Retirement Research, speak with host Charles Denis about their findings and offer insights to help both financial professionals and individual investors navigate the journey to retirement. For a copy of this year's report, please visit go.fidelity.ca/retirement survey. This podcast was recorded on June 23rd, 2020. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
Fidelity's 2020 Retirement Survey. We've been at it studying retirement for the last 15 years in Canada, so this is our 15th edition of the survey. We're going to have a conversation on the state of affairs of this topic. I'm joined by the two co-authors this morning, Michelle Monroe, who's Director, Tax and Retirement, and Peter Bowen, Vice President, Tax and Retirement. Welcome to you both. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me kick it off with a question for Peter. Can you talk to us about what's new in the report this year?
Thanks, Charles, and welcome everyone. Yes, we're pretty excited about this year's release. It is, as Charles noted, our 15th year of doing this. Since launching it in 2005, we've been able to ask consistent questions over the years, so we're able to compare and contrast and look at specific periods. Particularly relevant this year, of course, is how did things look relative to the financial crisis back in 2008-2009? So particularly important is when we were in field with the survey, which is between May 20 and 30. So, you know, COVID-19, of course, top of mind for people. Their March 31st statements may have arrived in the mail a week or two or three earlier. So their financial situation is in mind. And this year, we added a number of questions about COVID-19 specifically and how it's affecting Canadians. Plus, we took a look, we asked, you know, are the respondents indicating that they had their salaries or earnings negatively impacted as a result of the pandemic? And we were able to split the results out between those who said yes and those who said no. So throughout the report, we've actually identified specific questions where we're looking at those issues. Typically, from year to year, you know, we don't see huge swings in the responses to the questions. Not surprisingly, and as you might expect, we are seeing much more significant swings this year. So there's a lot to look into this year.
Super. Michelle, can you talk to us about some of the major changes in survey results that are in the 2020 report?
Yeah, thank you, Charles. Well, the whole purpose of the report is to get insights of how Canadians are feeling about retirement, as well as those who are in retirement. And one of the biggest swings that we saw is looking at pre-retirees. And we asked them, what's your perception of what is it going to be like in retirement? And you know, I'm just going to tell you like it is. 40% of pre-retirees said that they feel negative about retirement. I think that's like a huge percentage. And in fact, it's the highest percentage that we've had since we first started asking that question in 2014. And you know, as Peter mentioned, there's lots of good reasons for that. We're in the middle of a health crisis, a pandemic. There's been a lot of market volatility. People have had downsized from their jobs, or lost their jobs, and even if you haven't been directly impacted, you probably know somebody who has. But one of the really key insights that we found from this is that those who were working with a financial advisor, that 40% went almost down to half, so just 22% had a negative outlook. So it really drove home the importance of working with a financial advisor. And I think that means, like, for the financial advisors who are on the call listening right now, your hard work, your coaching, your expertise during these difficult times are having an impact. And I just want to share a verbatim. One client had said that his advisor telephoned him when the market was at its absolute lowest and reminded him that they had been through this in 2008 and made it through and got through it together, and they were going to get through this together, really showing a partnership between an advisor and their client. So I think wrapping this up is that Canadians, they are worried about their financial outlook and their retirement plans, and working with a financial partner and really seeing them as a financial coach getting through this.
Peter, I got to ask you, what do you think is the impact of COVID-19 on most retirement plans for Canadians?
That's a great question, Charles. I've been talking to a lot of financial advisors over the last couple of months, and you know, not surprisingly, they have a spectrum of clients, some of whom are affected dramatically, some somewhat, and others, you know, perhaps marginally or not at all from a financial perspective. And you know, there are no doubt are clients that are in difficult circumstances. One of my best friends runs a cafe in a small town. It's been shut down for 3 months. So difficult times for a lot of Canadians. I mentioned earlier that we had flagged a number of questions in the report dealing with the current situation. We've also got a specific page where we focus on how Canadians are coping with the current financial realities. So in terms of the number of respondents that indicated they were financially impacted, well, 38% of pre-retirees said they were, and in fact, 48% of working retirees, part-time job of some sort, indicated a decrease in income due to the pandemic. As well, what has it meant for retirement planning? Well, Canadians are spending less, saving less, and investing less. And that latter point, there's a big discrepancy, not surprisingly, between those who say they are affected versus those who say they aren't. A full 50% of those affected are saying that they are investing less now. And that compares to just 19% of those who say they're not affected. So that has big implications for financial advisors. As does one other observation that we came across in the responses, that which regardless of how they answered that am I affected question, Canadians say they are looking to invest more conservatively right now. So again, that's a concern for financial advisors. Again, people may have just looked at their March 31st statements and said, I need to be more conservative. But you know, this is where financial advisors can really help out. Michelle mentioned a verbatim. I've got one of our respondents indicated that his or her financial advisor reassured me that our plan was working. So staying on track and investing for the long term is one of the key attributes that advisors bring to the table. So we have to deal with this reality that Canadians are spending less, saving less, and are very wary of investments, especially those of high risk. But financial advisors have a lot of value to add in this circumstance.
Super. Michelle, I got to ask you, have women and men reacted the same way in this environment? And also geographically, are there differences between where you live in Canada?
Yeah. So the interesting part about the survey is that we can slice and dice different ways. So we can look at the segments by regions, and we could also look at the differences between men and women. And one of the things about the regions that we found is that in the western part, specifically BC, they were more likely to indicate that they have been negatively financially impacted due to the COVID pandemic. And we tried to dig through some of our results to figure out, well, what's the reasoning behind that? And we didn't see anything that was exactly on point, that was an outlier there. So one of the explanations maybe is that, well, BC was one of the, it was the first province to have a confirmed case of COVID-19. And also they could be impacted by the tourism industry. And it will be interesting to watch, because we like to watch the different trends to see what happens. As things start to open up and people start to want to travel more, will BC be one of the first provinces to have a more positive outlook? Because they're going to go through the stages more quickly. So I think that's a really interesting insight. And looking at it between the sexes, between men and women, women said that they were more likely to indicate that the financial well-being of their household was going to deteriorate over the next year. So that was 32% of females, pre-retiree females, versus just about 25% of males. So there's a pretty significant difference there. So as a woman, I wanted to understand, well, why is that? What is the discrepancy? So we dug in a little bit more, trying to figure out, well, what was some of the reasoning behind that? And in the survey, women were also more likely to tell us that they were uninterested in keeping up with financial issues on day-to-day basis. Okay, so I'm thinking about, okay, well, so we were out in the field in late May. So as Peter mentioned, just after people have got their March statements, and there's a lot of headlines in the news about the financial markets. So you're probably inundated. Women, all of us are inundated with what's going on with the markets, the volatility, and we're picking up on the negative. And from a female perspective, if I'm not interested in watching those day-to-day fluctuations, well, I'm also missing out on the good news stories. And in the absence of that good news, I'm more likely to assume the worst. So I really see this as an opportunity for financial advisors to actually have to connect with their female clients who may not have been as engaged in the conversations and really understand, well, what are their concerns, and provide that reassurance to help them stay on the right track. And I think Peter's going to talk about financial written plans next. So I think this is a good segue into that.
Yes, because there is some quality information about the importance of a written plan, isn't there, Peter?
Yes, absolutely. And this is actually a consistent theme from year to year, although I would actually say the data swings showing the importance of having a financial plan are even greater than they have been past. So this is a standing page that we have where we show how people are feeling in terms of their preparedness for retirement based on whether they have a written financial plan or not. And it's consistent from year to year again, and people that have a plan feel more prepared, and that's financially, emotionally, socially, and even physically. So it's just so critically important. Just to share some of the data points from this year, in terms of their financial preparedness, well, retirees with a plan, 94% of them say they were prepared for retirement. If they didn't have a plan, though, it drops to 72%. For pre-retirees, the numbers are not surprisingly somewhat lower. There's more uncertainty. It's a bit further into the future. 78% of pre-retirees that have a plan were prepared for retirement. Those without, only 44%. That's a 34% difference. That's huge, and we think that's the largest that we've seen since we started the survey. So having a plan is critically important. Unfortunately, the reality is a lot of Canadians do not have a financial plan. In fact, only 22% of pre-retirees indicated that they have a written financial plan. And that's not enough, right? We know that financial plans are critically important and we'll need them. So continue to work with your clients to help guide them through that process of developing a financial plan. You know, one of the verbatims we received from a respondent that They received an email letting me know that my investments are for the long term and asked me not to panic, to stick to the plan, and also offered to meet with me if needed. So support being offered to the clients throughout the situation and driving it back to the plan can be a huge value add. The written plans are helping to keep your clients on track towards their retirement.
So Michelle, can you give us your thoughts on why a financial advisor is so important for Canadians in retirement planning?
Yeah, thanks, Charles. Just let's level set it with talking a little bit about the different sources of financial advice that people have. They watch webcasts just like advisors do about financial advice like this one. There's a whole plethora of things on the internet and traditional TV, magazines, newspapers. They talk to family and friends. There's a lot of advice out there. But the most trusted source and the most used source continues to be financial advisors and financial planners. And what a great partner they are for individuals to really set them up for success. And, you know, during the pandemic, when there was a lot of market volatility, we asked people, has your financial advisor contacted you? And almost 70% of people said, yes, my financial advisor has contacted me. They sent a blanket email to their clients. You sent individual emails, phone calls. Peter and I have also been guests on webcasts that advisors are doing for their own clients. And so really stepping up to the plate. So I think it really makes a difference in having that partnership. Now, as I said that, I said, well, 70% of respondents said that they've heard from their financial advisor. That also means that 30% of clients haven't heard from their financial advisor. And I have two points here. Well, this is an area that you can control. So it's an opportunity to really get that percentage up higher, because this is when clients really need to and want to hear from you. It's during the difficult times. And if you're not doing that, well, you've opened up that door and you're at risk of losing clients because another advisor is going to come in and be able to demonstrate their value to your clients. So this is a really important time to talk to your clients. And as I mentioned before, that for those long-term relationships, we've seen volatility before in 2008, as well as right now, and helping your clients through those difficult times. I want to share some more statistics or information that we have in our survey, is that advised clients are so much more likely to say that they are on the right track with their financial plans and would be sticking to that plan through the pandemic. And I think that really demonstrates the value of advice and how you're helping your clients during this difficult time. And so this is where you're providing that rational advice during irrational times and how important it is to be that sound advice to your clients.
Super, Michelle. Thank you. We've got some good questions coming in from the audience that I'd like to get to. My clients and you judge who's better suited to answer. I won't make the call on that one. My clients closer to retirement are extremely stressed. What messages do you think we should be sharing with them based on the stats that you're sharing or based on the report that you've just come out with?
I'll start with that one. I think it's a very individual decision. I think it's stepping back and taking a look at the picture and looking at the financial picture. And I've spoken with different advisors, and I've heard a number of times where they've set up the plan for their clients and they've taken into account that market volatility is a regular feature of the client. And some of their clients are really in actually a good position that they don't need to delay their retirements. Whereas I think it's having the information and using that information as power to make informed decisions. But I will flip that, is that we watch the age of retirement trends. Back in the 1970s, it was about age 65, and that slowly decreased into the 90s, and it was in the low age 60. And it kind of hovered there until 2008, which was the economic crisis. And it's been slowly increasing since then. Now, we did see a slight increase in the expected age of retirement. Whether or not that's enough to attribute it to our current situation, or it's just a continuation of that trend, we don't know definitively, but it's something that we'll continue to monitor. But it is an important discussion to have with your clients to help them make informed decisions.
Well, a good follow-up question to some of your comments, Michelle, I'll address it to Peter. It goes like this. Have you seen any changes in attitude to when Canadians want to start their CPP or their QPP benefits?
No, we haven't. I mean, perhaps there's been a bit of pushing back because people typically won't start until they retire. So as the age of retirement moves a bit later, the start date for CPP and QPP has gone a little bit later, presumably. But people often don't take advantage of the opportunity. We know that very few Canadians wait until age 70, which is the latest date that you can start CPP and QPP and get an increased payment. Very few Canadians do that. It's only 1-2% of Canadians. So we're not seeing a big shift there. It's a great way to manage what we call longevity risk, the risk of living a long life. But Canadians don't do it. Now, I'd rather have a bird in hand than two in the bush approach, perhaps, that drives this. But we're not seeing a lot of Canadians delaying the date that they take CPP, QPP.
Peter, what are the most commonly seen aspects in a written financial plan that we see for Canadians? And maybe you can give us some thoughts on some of the stuff that might be missing.
Sure. Yeah, we could do a whole webcast on preparing a financial plan, of course, but it really does start with the goals that an individual has. What is your vision for retirement? And that is very, very much individual. Each individual's circumstances matter so much. I mean, do you have a spouse? Do you have dependents? I mean, I've got a couple of sons, one of whom has a physical disability. So that affects my financial plan. In that I'm trying to set aside more to deal with that particular circumstance. When do you want to retire? How long do you expect to live? That's one of the key inputs. Then we want to take a snapshot. Where do we stand currently? What are our assets, our liabilities, our income and expenses, cash flow items? What will we need in retirement? Again, income. That can come from government programs like CPP and QPP that you've mentioned, or OAS, but also from drawing down our assets, decumulation. And of course, those goals and visions about retirement will drive what your expenses are. So then you need a plan to invest. So that's asset allocation. What are your monthly or annual savings targets? Do you have an emergency fund? What's the plan to withdraw those assets? Is there an ordering? How do you want to do that? On top of all this, you need to layer in a number of items. You need insurance. Taxes, right? That's a very large expense for all of us. And, that affects your accumulation. It affects your decumulation. What types of plans are you using? If you have taxable assets, are you thinking carefully about the tax implications of the investments? So are you using corporate class? Are you using T-SWIP or Series T or other return of capital type of approaches to potentially defer taxes where it makes sense? And then estate planning, right? That's another key element that people need. In terms of commonly missing elements, well, the estate planning piece is one of the ones that tends to be the last that people think about. Along with that, powers of attorney. Too many people don't have those in place. And one other I'll throw out there that's often missing are just considering healthcare costs. It's a wild card that we hope we don't have to have considerable costs on down the road, but it is a reality for some people. Finally, I'd say it needs to be updated regularly, right? A financial plan it's a process. It's not an event. So it's an ongoing planning process.
I've got an interesting question. It seems to always come back when we talk about retirement, and it's probably a difficult answer, but I got to ask, what are your thoughts on sustainable withdrawal rates during a normal, well, it states during this environment, but this environment is not the environment, right? So it's, what would be a sustainable withdrawal rate for most folks heading into retirement? What would be your thoughts? I know I'm speaking to two CPAs, so you may have an accounting view on that. So
we've actually been, you know, thinking about this for years and done some research ourselves and looked at this globally, in fact, in terms of sustainable withdrawal rates. The number that has historically been used as sort of a good guidepost is 4%. We think it might, you know, 4.5% might be sustainable. And that's both looking at history plus projecting forward into the future in terms of expected rates of return, you know, government programs, how they play out into it. So that 4 to 4.5% rate, the current environment really shouldn't change that. Now we do have the what we call the sequence of returns risk, where you retire and then you see your portfolio hit dramatically. That can impact, but take a look at what's happened over the last couple months, right? March 23rd was the bottom of the markets. The markets have come back very significantly. So your clients might be looking at their March 31st statements, and those values might already be substantially out of date. The final point I'll make here is that although we have 4 or 4.5% as perhaps a broad measure for people to think about as a withdrawal rate, it will vary over time, right? Spending often increases when we move into retirement. My best friend and his wife are retired, and they have been spending a lot of money because in the first few years of retirement, they want to travel, and they've been traveling a ton. So I'm sure their withdrawal rate has been significantly higher than 4 or 4.5%, but that's part of their plan. And that's the case for many people where it will come down somewhat later on. So although it's a single number that we talk about when we're looking at, you know, articles in the press, for instance, it needs to be dynamic and thought about over the long term.
Well, we're coming up on the hour. Michelle, Peter, thank you very much for your insights and the highlights of this report. And when it comes to financial services tools, Fidelity can be a partner. I can think of a few ones really quickly. For non-registered income streams, you may want to be looking at our corporate class T-SWIP. For accumulation in non-registered assets, you may want to consider corporate class. And if you're looking for all-inclusive asset allocation products that may deliver some stability to your investors, we got a long list of five-star funds. So on that, again, thank you very much for joining us. Until next time, and as always, stay safe.
Thank you for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. For more information on future live webcasts, please visit fidelity.ca. Don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter and subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice.